The last case of the day, Chavarria v. United States. And we'll hear from Ms. Connor.
Thank you, Your Honors. Good morning. My name is Carrie Connor, and I'm here today on behalf of Julio Chavarria. Mr. Chavarria filed a pro se petition seeking on a claim of ineffective assistance of counsel based on the advice he had received from his attorney. Mr. Chavarria's case was, in fact, final in 2009. He received a sentence of 12 months and a day and completed his sentence, only to learn at the end of that 12 months and a day sentence that he would be taken into custody by the Immigration Department and ultimately deported. Mr. Chavarria did, in fact, file his petition while he was still in the country. However, prior to counsel being appointed, he was, in fact, deported and is now living in Mexico. Under the Padilla case, the United States Supreme Court specifically indicated that it would not make a distinction between misadvice and advice on immigration matters, that both fell under the Sixth Amendment protection for effective assistance of counsel. This court decided Chaidez, which found that Padilla was not retroactive. However, when the United States Supreme Court took Chaidez, the court ruled that there was a distinction between misadvice and advice. Specifically, the ruling in Chaidez found that the failure to advise was a new rule under the Sixth Amendment, and therefore would not apply retroactively. Therefore, in cases like Mr. Chavarria's, where in fact his case was final, which it was at the time Padilla was decided, he would not have a claim as to lack of immigration advice. However, interestingly, in the Supreme Court's opinion, when it did carve out this small distinction, it indicated that, in fact, the Padilla line of cases finding ineffective assistance of counsel based on misadvice did, in fact, coexist harmoniously with prior pre-Padilla law. Therefore, the language of Chaidez indicates, the Supreme Court language, that, in fact, the Chaidez opinion did not actually apply in terms of lack of retroactivity to misadvice.
Ms. Connor, I'm not sure I can state this clearly,
okay. But
this requires some pretty elaborate gymnastics because Padilla was itself a case of bad advice, right?
Yes, it was.
So Chaidez tells us that Padilla is not retroactive. Padilla was a case of bad advice. There were a few cases, obviously, before Padilla holding that, but not necessarily a widespread rule. And so you seem to be telling us that Chaidez really means that that Padilla itself, on the facts of Padilla, would be retroactive, even while it's saying Padilla is not retroactive. I don't know if I've said that clearly. I don't know if it is clear, but...
Well, between advice and misadvice, it can get confusing in itself, Your Honor. The conglomeration of cases, Your Honor, are extremely confusing. But the Padilla holding, which lumped together advice and misadvice, the actual holding, and the Chaidez Supreme Court ruling that distinguishes between advice and misadvice, does so without reference to the facts of Padilla. And as I'm sure this Court's aware, there's been a great deal of academic discussion of making sense of all this. But the bottom line is that the issue in Padilla of finding that the failure to advise as a Sixth Amendment right, was found in Chaidez not to be retroactive because it was a new finding of law. The court in Chaidez, using the phrase in harmony, specifically distinguished those line of cases out of the Second, Sixth, 11th and 9th Circuit, I believe, that actually had taken on the issue of misadvice. Putting all of that together, and where are we with Mr. Chavarria? Mr. Chavarria's pro se petition did rely on Padilla. In his factual statement in support of his petition, which is found at the docket at document number 60, pages 15 and 16, in a somewhat inartful way, Mr. Chavarria does in fact state that his attorney misadvised him regarding his deportability, and he specifically references that his attorney had said he had spoke to immigration and they were not interested in Mr. Chavarria. Therefore, there is evidence in Mr. Chavarria's pro se petition that would, in fact, support an evidentiary hearing on misadvice. And I think it's important for us all to remember that the Seventh Circuit Chavez case, which did not make the distinction that the Supreme Court decision made, is the basis upon which Mr. Chavarria's petition was, in fact, dismissed. Therefore, we are asking the court to remand to the district court to allow for an evidentiary hearing on Mr. Chavarria's pro se claims that he was, in fact, misadvised. In May of this year, we received an order from the court asking that at this oral argument we talk about a couple of issues. I've clearly addressed the issue, though it is somewhat convoluted because the cases are somewhat convoluted, that Chavez does not prohibit Mr. Chavarria's claim of misadvice. The two other questions that were asked by this court to address today were whether or not it would make a difference whether those representations by counsel were legal and or factual. Under the theory, and as I would suggest the court to look back at Couto, C-O-U-T-O, out of the Second Circuit, which we have cited, the Second Circuit had previously said failure to advise is not a requirement, or to advise on immigration is not a requirement placed on the defense counsel, but that misadvice is, in fact, a significant failure leading to ineffective assistance of counsel. The importance that Couto has in the analysis is that when the misadvice goes to the ultimate decision that the defendant makes in accepting the plea, and in fact that advice is wrong, whether legal or whether factual, then the plea is rendered involuntary and unknowing. And that goes well beyond whether or not we're talking about collateral matters. And in fact, does have much support in Seventh Circuit law that ultimately the basis for a defendant's plea, his reasons for entering a plea, must be knowing and voluntary. But again, we're talking in a bit of a vacuum here because we have not had the evidentiary hearing. We don't know today what, in fact, the district court would make in terms of findings of fact. But we do know that Mr. Chavarria adequately raised these issues in his pro se petition so as to warrant an evidentiary hearing.
Since he's been deported, how would we have an evidentiary hearing?
I beg your pardon, Your Honor?
Since he has been deported, and he would seem to be an essential witness, how could there be an evidentiary hearing?
Well, Your Honor, I think that under immigration law, there are provisions for paroling someone in for a proceeding like this. It certainly could be done. We do have the capacity to do video conferencing and various types of alternative means if Mr. Chavarria cannot be brought into the courtroom. However, I believe that the parole system through immigration would allow for him to be brought in for this limited purpose. I see I'm down to my rebuttal time. May I
Thank you,
pass
Ms. Connor.
The podium?
Thank you, Ms. Connor. For the government, Mr. Holler.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. Your Honor, Chavez held that Padilla versus Kentucky is a new rule that does not apply to cases like Mr. Chavarria's that are on collateral review. Now, essentially what the court should look at are the various cases that were existing prior to Padilla. And in the Supreme Court, that's the case of Hill, which focused essentially on the distinction between direct and collateral consequences but left that distinction open. And this court then was called upon to evaluate what to do with that. And this court has addressed that in two cases, United States versus George and Santos versus Cole, and then a third case, which is this case, court's own Chaidez decision. And I think that's where this court needs to look. In George, 869 F. 2nd at 337, the court said, actual knowledge of consequences which are collateral to the guilty plea is not a prerequisite to the entry of a knowing and intelligent plea. And this was because deportation is not, quote, part of or enmeshed in the criminal proceeding. And the court also went on to say that the Sixth Amendment, quote, does not extend to collateral aspects of the prosecution. Essentially, there are a couple different ways that one can look at the question. One can look at the question as, is it direct or collateral? And then if it's direct, misadvice or non-advice, either way, you have to get it right. You could also, and if it's collateral, it doesn't matter. It's a collateral consequence. And I shouldn't say it doesn't matter, because what the court said in Santos versus Kolb is, it's not a Sixth Amendment issue. It's something that should be regulated and is regulated by the state bars. It's something that should be regulated and can be regulated by statute, as evidenced by how dramatically Rule 11 has expanded since its creation and all the additional things that are included. But what this court said in Santos versus Kolb and what it said in the United States versus George is, it's not covered by the Sixth Amendment. That's what the courts said. And then again, in Padilla, the court doesn't go to this misadvice, non-advice distinction that some other courts recognized. And I think in the misadvice, non-advice question, so I'm sorry, to pull back, there was one way to cut this between direct and collateral. There was another way to cut this between misadvice and non-advice. That's the way the concurring opinion cut it in Padilla itself. But the court, seven members of the court, did not go that way. They said, we're not going to resolve it based on misadvice, non-advice. And to the extent that direct collateral exists, this deportation is enough like direct that it goes over here. And it's something, regardless of misadvice or non-advice, it counts. And in Padilla, the court did not get into the misadvice question, because it just said, it's whatever it is, it's enough like direct that misadvice or non-advice, either way, it counts. So it never resolved the preliminary question of, okay, which it could have. It could have just said, it doesn't make a difference whether this is direct or collateral. This is misadvice. It's in, and we're not going to resolve the background question. It didn't do that. The Supreme Court has never said that there is any misadvice, non-advice distinction. And in fact, if one reads some of the Law Review articles that are cited in both Padilla and Chaidez, articles from the Cornell Law Review and the Iowa Law Review, they basically say, as a matter of law, as a matter of logic, this misadvice, non-advice distinction doesn't make any sense. The distinction that makes sense is direct or collateral. And maybe deportation should be considered direct, but if it's a direct consequence, it matters. And if it's a collateral consequence, the Supreme Court has always said, it doesn't really matter what you say about it. I disagree with my colleague's suggestion that the Seventh Circuit's Chaidez decision was somehow different from the Supreme Court's decision. The Seventh Circuit said that while some lower courts had extrapolated that counsel performs effectively by advising as to direct consequences, and it cited its own decision in Santos versus Kolb, that therefore there hadn't been any kind of recognition that deportation counted as a direct consequence. The Chaidez decision doesn't really talk about misadvice, non-advice, and Chaidez itself is a non-advice case. And I think the logic of the majority opinion in Chaidez is pretty closely tracked by the majority opinion in the Supreme Court's decision in Chaidez.
Mr. Holler, suppose the advice here was a factual matter. You say, talk to the IRS, INS people, and they didn't want to. Suppose it was deliberate. That make a difference. The lawyer wants to get rid of this case. He wants this plea to go down. He deliberately lies to the guy. He says, look, I've covered with this with the government. You're cool. Don't worry about it.
I think that if that were true, Your Honor, I think that would cause all kinds of problems with the state bar for that lawyer. But I do think
that's a lot of help for the four guys going to Mexico.
I understand that, and I also think that the case law in this instance suggests that if one materially makes a material representation, at least with where the case law stood in 2009, which is the case law that we have to look at, I think that the case law suggests that, I mean, look at George and look at Santos themselves. There were errors, fundamental errors that occurred because nobody talked about deportation until it was too late. And so I think that the court doesn't, the court as a constitutional matter does not look at that. They look at, is there effective representation? And what, if, how effective representation was defined prior to Padilla, and possibly, frankly, even post-Padilla, is if it's on a direct matter, you have to be accurate. And if it's on a collateral matter, it doesn't make any difference. Now, I think, though, that I recognize that's an uncomfortable situation to look at. And where I think this gets caught is in Rule 11, because Rule 11 covers all kinds of consequences and says, you know, is there any other promise you've been made? Is there anything? And that colloquy was run through in this case. You know, were you told anything? Were any promises made to you? So if there was a promise that was made on a collateral matter that's a lie, you know, your parole in a state court case is not going to get revoked. Your wife's plea agreement is, your wife's charges are going to be dismissed.
I always thought those questions were aimed primarily at promises or assurances from the government.
I think they probably are, but I think the question is still phrased more broadly and at least was here, I believe, to include, have any promises or assurances been made? They do focus on the government, but I actually don't have the change of plea in front of me. It'd be around page 30 and 31 where they go through, you know, other than what is in the plea, have any promises been made to you? And there are questions about satisfaction with your attorney. And usually when these things do go to hearing, that's often what's focused on is, well, you said in your change of plea that no promises had been made. You said all of these things in your change of plea hearing. And I think to a large extent, you know, these cases don't get litigated because the defendants know that they've covered all these things. And because defense attorneys don't, I mean, there were tons of cases that came up after Chaidez because many defense attorneys thought they didn't have to cover immigration status. And so many of them quite properly never covered immigration status. But I don't think that there are very many attorneys out there who have affirmatively lied to their clients. And I think that the reason that's borne out by the case law, that after Santos versus Kolb, for 24 years, this court never even heard a claim of misadvice. I also would disagree slightly with my opponent's suggestion that there was uniformity in case law. I don't think that the fact that the 11th, the 9th, and the 2nd circuits had all come to the conclusion that misadvice claims could be recognized shows uniformity, because I think that those decisions sort of are very different in their legal rationales when one really hones down into them. Downs Morgan in the 11th circuit says, look, we don't think that that false advice in the immigration context as a general matter should be included. But in this case where you're alleging that you're going to be killed if you're returned to this country, that heightens it, and therefore you can recognize it. The Second Circuit said, look, basically what the Iowa and Cornell Law Review article said, which is, you know, we're very hard-pressed to find a distinction between direct and collateral consequences, and we've sort of already, or between advice, misadvice and non-advice, and we think in an appropriate case we might revisit that question. But for here, for these particular purposes, on the very facts of this case, we're gonna go with misadvice, suggesting that there isn't this distinction, but we're kind of going where the Supreme Court eventually will go. And the Ninth Circuit's decision in Kwan, by contrast, I think does cut the cord this way and does say non-advice out, misadvice in. So the fact that the courts kind of were all grappling and coming to something doesn't necessarily mean that there was some clear body of precedent in pre-Padilla law. As a final point, I would say that the question presented in this case is on the certificate of appealability and is, does Padilla versus Kentucky apply to this case? Is it a new rule for purposes of this case, or is it an old rule that applies? That's what the certificate of appealability was granted on. I think the answer to that question is clearly no. And our argument would be that any other potential claims that could be raised have been waived, both because they're not in the certificate of appealability and because the defense below, in response to our motion to dismiss in light of Chaidez, didn't say, wait, I actually want to raise something else, but pretty much said in, you know, record document 110, you know, if Chaidez hasn't been decided incorrectly, Seventh Circuit Chaidez, my case is done. And I also think that if I have just one more point, I would say that I don't know that the court needs to reach out and decide that difficult issue beyond the simple question presented in the certificate of appealability, because I don't think in a going forward basis this case has all that much salience, not to minimize in any way the importance it obviously has to Mr. Chavarria, but going forward, any plea that occurred in March of 2010 or later is going to be governed by Padilla, and misadvice is going to drop out. And in the past, for terms of past cases, I just don't think there are very many of those because of the statute of limitations that would apply. If the court has no further questions, we believe that the district court's order should be affirmed.
Thank you. Ms. Conner, rebuttal.
I do think it's very important to state from the outset that though the government is talking about collateral versus non-collateral still, Padilla really put an end to that when it comes to immigration. What Padilla said basically is collateral doesn't matter. Clearly, immigration rights and deportability is so very significant to people living in the United States and millions of them that we are not going to talk so much about collateral versus non-collateral. In fact, there's discussion in Padilla rejecting that and saying Sixth Amendment requires that counsel advise. What's important, though, I think we have to go back to is that at the time that all of this was done in the district court, we didn't have the Supreme Court decision in Chaidez, which stepped away from the Padilla no distinction to finding a significant distinction. Now, I would disagree with the government wholeheartedly and ask the court to once again focus on the Couto case, C-O-U-T-O. In Couto, which is the Second Circuit, again, Second Circuit said we don't require advice, but misadvice is a problem. And in Couto, just like in Chavarria, the defendant pled guilty to an aggravated offense which required his deportation. And citing the Seventh Circuit case in George, Couto said, because that information that was wrongly given to the defendant so clearly affected his decision in entering a guilty plea, we cannot find a knowing and voluntary plea. And they relied on a Seventh Circuit case for that holding. My time is up. I would simply conclude with, after this discussion, it becomes even more clear how important a remand is, so that we can flush out what is the misrepresentation, what are the facts at issue, and legal misinformation, if any, and how did the defendant rely on it, before we really can reach the final issue on what should happen from here out. And so we ask the court for a remand on, based on the distinguished cases of misadvice. Thank you.
Ms. Conner? Thank you to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will be in recess until tomorrow.